Well, hello, friends. Father Frank Pavone here, National Director of Priests for Life. Thank you so much for joining me for this broadcast, our pro-life MAGA broadcast. And yes, this is a MAGA hat, and I wear it proudly, and I know that many of you do too. And I'd like to ask you something today. If you have one of these, send me a picture of you wearing it. And we're going to compose a compilation, and then on these broadcasts, if it's okay with you, we'll do a collage, and we'll have all the different supporters. There are tens of thousands of you out there that are joining us for these broadcasts, and we'll create a nice collage and show everybody all of the support that we're garnering out there as we approach these midterm elections, only a matter of days away. Tonight, you're going to understand better than you have ever understood before the importance of these midterm elections for pro-life legislation, and actually for any kind of legislation that the MAGA agenda to make America great again requires. I'm going to show you something based on the history of the United States, based on how the Congress works, that will help you to really be encouraged, because you'll see how we make progress on legislation. Again, the issue I deal with all the time, the abortion issue, that's part and parcel of the agenda that our president is trying to advance, that the Republican Party is trying to advance, give protection to the weakest and most vulnerable children. I'm going to show you the answer to the question as to why it takes so long. Many people ask, you know, it's been 45 years of legal abortion. Why in the world have we not made more progress, even if we have pro-life people in government? Well, I'm going to show you why. It's not hard to understand. We're going to go through this. We're going to talk about why we need pro-life majorities in the House and in the Senate. We're going to talk about why we need a supermajority in the Senate. We're going to talk about all these things. You're going to be enlightened and astonished, and you're going to have some nuggets from this particular program that you will be able to pass on to friends and to others, to be able to motivate them to get out to the polls. That's what this is about, motivating voters, starting with ourselves, to get out there and vote. And if you have already voted, because many states have their early voting going on right now, well then, fine, use the time, use the effort, use the energy, use this information to get others out to vote. So we're going to get into it in a moment here. We're going to go to some special spots first, and then we will get into our informational lesson tonight about the lawmaking process, pro-life laws, and why we need a solid pro-life Republican majority as a result of this midterm elections. Welcome once again, and let's get ready for a great broadcast.
Hello, I'm Evangelist Alveda King, with a very important message regarding the midterm elections. These elections are every bit as important as the presidential elections or any other election in this country. On every level, it's very important that our leaders believe that in God we trust, and that we are and must remain one nation under God. I'll take it one step further and say that we should be teaching that we're not even separate races. We are one blood according to Acts 17:26. One blood and one human race. Abortion is such a threat to America, to the baby in the womb, to the health of the mother, to the relationship of the father and the mother, to the relationship of the family, and then into all areas of life in our nation. But we each can do something about it. I urge all of our followers and our communities to vote for life. Your vote matters. Hello, I'm Evangelist.
Well, friends, in order to bring about protection for the unborn, in fact, in order to bring about any public policy that we want to see enacted to make America great again, we have to deal with the way that the Constitution designates that the laws of our land be made. There's a specific process that the United States Congress goes through in order to pass a law. And what that process is that we have the House of Representatives and the Senate. Any particular member can introduce a law, which before it becomes a law, is called a bill. And let's say that bill, for example, is going to protect children in the womb. And then there's a process of hammering out the bill. It goes into a committee. There's discussion. There are amendments. There may be hearings. Information is gathered. And eventually, if the bill has enough support, it goes to a vote. Now, as you know, many of you are familiar with this. We learn these things in school, but you know, unless we're involved in the political realm, we don't necessarily deal with these facts every day. So this is a good refresher for all of us. The vote has to take place both in the House and in the Senate. So we're talking about two votes. In other words, a bill, let's say, to protect children in the womb from 20 weeks forward, which is one of the bills that actually did get introduced in the last couple of Congresses. The House has to introduce a bill and deal with it as a House of Representatives. The Senate needs to introduce the same or very similar legislation and then go through their own process of debating it or amending it and voting on it. Then, if one or it could originate either in the House or the Senate, and then if the other adopts the identical wording of the bill, then you come out with the same bill that both the House and the Senate need to pass before it goes to the desk of the president. From there, it goes to the president. But if there are different versions, if the House passes one bill, the Senate passes a different version, same bill but different wording, you can't send two different bills to the desk of the president. It's got to be one single bill. And so there's a process where a committee looks at both versions and reconciles them and ends up making it into a single bill with a single wording that then gets approved and then goes to the president. And then, of course, he can either sign the bill into law if it's something he agrees with or veto it, and therefore it does not become law. Now, at any point in the process here, a bill can die if it doesn't get acted on by the committee, if the committee doesn't send it to a vote, or if the vote fails, doesn't have enough to pass, at any of those points, then the bill dies and nothing further happens with it, at least not in that particular Congress. Now, why is it important for us to review these particular things? Because there's another dynamic happening here. Besides the actual process of a bill becoming law, here's what we encounter. We encounter the reality of the political parties. The political parties have positions. And so let's review this a little bit because it directly affects what kind of laws we get. It affects what kind of bills get introduced in the first place. So you've got the Democrat Party, represented by the color blue, the Republican Party, represented by the color red, and they each have their governing philosophies are represented by a platform. What is the position of the party, for example, on protecting children in the womb from abortion? Clear-cut difference between the two. The Republican platform says the babies should be protected. They have an inherent right to life. Nobody can take it away. And in fact, their lives should be protected just like the lives of you and me are protected. The Democrat platform, on the other hand, says that abortion should be permitted. In fact, it doesn't put any limits on it. Permitted throughout the pregnancy. It doesn't say in the late stages only for medical emergencies or anything like that. wide open abortion. And in fact, the Democrat platform calls for the repeal of the Hyde Amendment. Now, the Hyde Amendment protects your tax dollars and mine from going to pay for abortion, at least a certain amount of those tax dollars, because the abortion industry is funded by many different streams of money, but that will be the subject of a later broadcast. But the point is that the Democrat platform wants to do away with that protection of your money and mine and let some of our tax money go for abortions. So it's not just, oh, well, someone can have an abortion if they want. The Democrat position is someone can have an abortion if they want. By the way, you have to help pay for it. Okay, so it's in black and white. It's not coming from me. Read the platforms. You'll see it there. And let me just put a parenthesis here. If you want to see what these platforms say, votinginfo.net is a site that we have created to show you not only a summary of the party platforms, but the actual full document itself. Read the platform before the election. That's an important document to know. Now, the reason I bring this up is that the positions of the parties influence this process of lawmaking. Because at any point in time, one of the two parties controls the House of Representatives in the sense of having a majority. And at any given time, one or another party controls or has a majority in the Senate. So let's look at it this way. If we say we've got the House and we've got the Senate, and at any given time, either the Republicans have the majority or the Democrats do. And we're going to look at the implications of this in a little bit of detail. So you could have a split. You could have at any given time the House under Democrat control and the Senate under Republican control. Or it can be the other way around. You could have the House under Republican control and the Senate under Democrat control. Or you could have both the House and Senate under Democrat control, and you can have or the House and the Senate both under Republican control. And right now, majorities of Republicans control both the House and the Senate. That's the way things are right now. But every 2 years, that can change. Every 2 years with the midterm elections. And that's where we are right now. Now, who controls the White House, what party that is, the president belongs to, that, of course, at any given time, can be Republican or Democrat, and that gets decided every 4 years, as you know, with the presidential election. And I know these are basic rudimentary things, but you'll see the importance of this as I get to my next detailed point. So this every 4 years, and right now, of course, we have a president of the Republican Party as well, so we have it all in the red column right now. Follow me here for a moment. We looked at the process of creation of a bill and changing it into a law, right? So the House has to pass and the Senate has to pass the identical bill. In the end, it has to be identical. Then they send it here to the White House and the president either signs it into law or vetoes it. Now, think for a minute again about the party platforms. The party itself that controls majority control of the House, the Senate, and then that controls the White House has a particular philosophy. It's not just about the position of the candidate that you elected. You know, anyone can come along and tell you what they think, what they believe, what they'll promise to do. But they're very strongly influenced by the platform of the party. So that if you take an issue like abortion, the pro-life position is what the Republicans pursue, and that's going to affect the way that they vote. So if for something to become law, it has to pass House, Senate, and then have the support of the White House, when they're all under the control of the same party, the policy preferences of that party platform are more likely to become a reality, or they're more likely to become law, right? It makes sense. But any time that you have a split, So let's say you have a Republican Senate, a Republican in the White House, but then the House of Representatives goes like this. Well, now you have a split. So let's say again, in terms of that pro-life bill protecting babies, a senator might introduce it, get a vote in the Senate. President might be saying, yeah, I want to sign that, but it's not going to get from here to here. It's not going to get to his desk if the House is against it. So the legislation never moves. The other way around, too, if it's a Republican House, a Democrat Senate, the House may vote on and even pass a particular bill, but the Senate's not going to take it up. They're not even going to take it up. You have to understand, whichever party is in the majority, not only do they have a majority of the votes, they have control of the committees. Remember I pointed out, that in the process of a bill becoming law, it has to go through a committee. Now, there are various committees. There are many different committees, standing committees, and they deal with, the committee deals with different topics depending on what the law is about. What theme? Is it about the economy? Is it about national security? Is it about abortion? Is it about the courts? Whatever theme it is depends on what committee it goes to when a particular member introduces it. But it's the control of the committees. The committees are going to be under the control of the party that has the majority in that chamber. So, for example, we have, well, you saw recently a very clear example of this. In the Senate, which again is under Republican majority control right now, the Judiciary Committee, judiciary being the courts, controls the process of confirming a judge to the court after the president nominates him or her. So the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh for the Supreme Court was handled, as we all saw very publicly, by the Senate Judiciary Committee. Now, because the Senate is under majority Republican control right now, you notice that that committee had more Republicans than Democrats. It was about evenly divided, these committees, but the majority of members were Republican. And the chairman of the committee, Senator Charles Grassley from Iowa, a Republican senator. Why? Because the Republicans control the committee. Why? Because they have a majority in the chamber itself. The House committees right now are controlled by majority Republicans too. Now, what that means is if a bill is favorable to the position of the party platform, well, then things are going to go such a way that the committee is going to like that bill. Committees that are controlled by the Republican majority are going to like bills that implement the Republican Party platform. And so those committees are going to send the bill through the process, and then they'll send it out to the whole chamber, to the whole floor, and they'll get a vote. And again, if they're in the majority, they're likely to get that bill passed. Although individual members can always vote not with their party, and they can always raise various objections in the process. So it's by no means guaranteed, but it's certainly the way things lean. Now, let me go through some details here now of the current Congress that's now concluding, the 115th Congress. And I want to show you the results of many of the votes that have to deal with the abortion issue. I'm going to show you some numbers here of votes that have to deal with the abortion issue in order to make this simple point that when you elect Republicans to the Congress, the House and the Senate, you're going to get votes going in the pro-life direction. If you elect a Democrat to the House, to the Senate, you elect Democrats, though they're going to vote in a pro-abortion direction. Let me show you, because the numbers don't lie. In the House, this Congress, one vote that was taken was the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act. Now, these are only the votes in the House. This doesn't mean that they got even voted on in the Senate. This doesn't mean that they became law. It just means here's the vote that took place in the House. No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion. That's what it means, that there would be no taxpayer funding going for abortion. The number of Republicans that voted for that was 235. Only three Democrats voted for that. Meanwhile, the number of Republicans who voted against that, in other words, that your money should go for abortion, zero. Number of Democrats that wanted that, 183. Look at that, those lopsided numbers. It was a party line vote. Another vote that was taken was to nullify the rule of President Obama, pro-abortion Title 10 rule, okay, telling the states that they could not could not divert money away from Planned Parenthood in the abortion industry. Republicans, 228 voted in favor of that. 228, and then only two Democrats did. Those who voted no, we don't want to restore the right to the states to divert money from abortion, only two Republicans said that, whereas 186 Democrats voted that way, that the money should keep going to the abortion industry. Pain-capable Unborn Child Protection Act. This is protecting the babies in the womb from 20 weeks forward. Look at the vote. 234 Republicans said, yes, let's protect them. Only three Democrats. Meanwhile, only two Republicans said no, and 187 Democrats said no, we don't want to protect these babies at 20 weeks going forward. Then there's the Born Alive Abortion Supporters Protection Act. This was another abortion survivors, rather. That's a misprint. Abortion Survivors Protection Act. This was a vote to protect babies born alive after a failed abortion. Republicans said by a margin of 235, of course, protect these babies. Only six Democrats did. Meanwhile, not a single Republican voted against this measure, while 183 Democrats voted against this measure. You noticing a pattern here? Let's continue. Let's go over to the Senate in this particular Congress and look at that same nullification of the Obama pro-abortion Title 10 rule. 50 Republicans said, yes, let's nullify it. In other words, let's give the states the right to defund Planned Parenthood. Meanwhile, zero Democrats were in favor of that. Republicans that voted against it, only two, and Democrats, 48. In other words, that your money should go to the abortion industry, Democrats said, yes, it should, 48. Again, whether to allow filibusters on Supreme Court nominations. Now, we'll get into more of this in a moment. But again, this favors the pro-life position. Whether to allow a filibuster on a Supreme Court nomination makes it more difficult to get that nominee onto the court. And this was the vote by which the Republicans changed that particular rule, so that we could get Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh confirmed. Well, the Democrats, no Republicans voted to continue that filibuster. 48 Democrats did. Meanwhile, Republicans voted 52, Democrats zero. That was a complete party line vote. The confirmation of Justice Gorsuch, this happened the very next day. You see the Republicans voted 51, only three Democrats. Meanwhile, a no vote, no Republicans, 45 Democrats voted against him. Then a vote on replacing Obamacare and defunding Planned Parenthood. In the Senate, 50 Republicans said, yes, we want to do that, no Democrats. Meanwhile, those who said they didn't want to do that, two Republicans and 50 Democrats. The tie was broken by Vice President Pence. Then the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, whether or not to continue moving forward with that particular bill. 48 Republicans said yes, only three Democrats said yes, and two Republicans said no, and 44 Democrats said no, we don't want to even consider protecting these babies in the late stages of pregnancy. And then, denial of federal funds to abortion providers, a vote that took place just at the end of August and did not pass, but 45 Republicans said yes. And 48 Democrats said no. And then, of course, the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh, 49 Republicans and one Democrat said yes, no Republicans, and 48 Democrats said no. And you see the pattern. Now, lest you think that this is just in the current Congress that this is the case, I want to give you the summary back in the previous Congress. There again, it wasn't exactly the same members in the House, wasn't exactly the same members of the Senate, but brothers and sisters, we see a pattern here. Republicans voting in favor of what favors the unborn and favors the pro-life movement. Democrats always voting against it. With very few exceptions, all these exceptions you can count on one hand. Let's take you through this. No taxpayer funding for abortions. 239 Republicans yes, 178 Democrats no. Repeal of the Obamacare health law. 239 Republicans yes, 183 Democrats no. To block the to block a Washington, D.C. Pro-abortion law, Republicans 225, Democrats no, 179. Motion to add an open-ended health exception to the 20-week abortion ban. Okay, so this was a vote to amend the law that would protect babies by saying, oh, but except for health, which, as we know, is the exception that swallows the rule, it would end up allowing abortion. The yes votes, 181 Democrats. The no votes, 243 Republicans. The passage of the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. Again, the Republicans passed it, 238 votes. Democrats opposed it, 180 votes. Passage of the Defund Planned Parenthood Act. Look at the margin. 239 Republicans, yes. 184 Democrats, no. Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. 243 Republicans, yes. 177 Democrats, no. And on it goes. Women's Public Health and Safety Act. 234 Republicans, yes. 184 Democrats, no. Again, handfuls of exceptions either way. Party line votes. Initial approval of a pro-life reconciliation bill to defund Planned Parenthood. 239 Republicans, yes. 182 Democrats, no. A similar vote after that. 239 yes, 178 no. And then on it goes. Another vote. 240 Republicans to one Democrat. 183 to three Republicans. Tax-subsidized abortion on demand for federal employees. 176 Democrats said yes, only one Republican, whereas 238 Republicans said no, and only seven Democrats, to say no tax-subsidized abortion for federal employees. Again, to block a D.C. pro-abortion bill, yes, 221 Republicans, no, 178 Democrats. Conscience protection, which would protect people that don't want to be involved in performing abortions. 242 Republicans, yes, only three Democrats. Only one Republican, no, 181 Democrats, no. In the Senate, Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. Again, this is the previous Congress. 51 Republicans, yes. 40 Democrats, no. Another vote to table an amendment to provide $1 billion to abortion providers. Republicans, 53. Of course we want to table that. Democrats, 45. No, 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 we don't. An amendment to preserve federal funding of Planned Parenthood. 51 Republicans voting against that amendment, and 45 Democrats voting for preserving the funding. And then finally, a pro-life budget reconciliation bill, 52 Republicans saying yes, 45 Democrats saying no. And so, brothers and sisters, you see the pattern here very clearly, and it goes back to the point we're making here, and it goes back to the point of these midterm elections. You can count on it. Some people say, oh, well, you know, the party, it doesn't matter what party they are. We want to know if they themselves are pro-life. No, it does matter what party they are. You can see it by the numbers. The numbers don't lie. It's very, very clear. Now, I want to show you one more thing, and we have this on our, I'm going to show you our website in order to walk you through this. ProLifeVote.com is our website. And on that website, we have various blue bars at the top that will show you various other pages that have a lot of information. And one of those blue bars says, elections affect legislation. And let's go to that page and take a look at what I have for you there. And you can study this in more detail, but we're going to go through it here. And you're going to see what I was talking about on the whiteboard a moment ago, which party controls the White House, the Senate, and the House of Representatives. And we're going to see back to the year that Roe v. Wade was passed, 1973, we're going to see how this breaks down. And you're going to be surprised how few times the same party dominates the White House, the Senate, and the House all at the same time. Because as we've already seen, both in the lawmaking process and in the way that the votes on these laws end up turning out, when the Republicans are in control, pro-life legislation moves forward. When the Democrats are in control, pro-abortion legislation moves forward. Let's look at the breakdown here. You see 1973 to 1975, even if you just look at the colors, you don't even have to read closely the numbers. The president was Republican, but the House and Senate were Democrat. 75 to 77, see this is going according to each two-year session of Congress, okay? So 75 to 77, again, a Republican president, Democrat Congress. 77 to 79, all three Democrats, and the same thing the next 2 years after that. 81, Republican president, Republican Senate, but Democrat House. Look at 83 to 85. Again, just look at the colors and you can see very quickly. The first column is White House, the second column is Senate, the third column is House. 85 to 87, it's still not unanimous. 87 to 89, it's still not unanimous. The Democrats gained control of the Senate. 89 to 91, Republican president, Democrat Congress. And same in 91 to 93. Then in 93, Clinton took office. And then you had Democrat control both of the White House, the House, and the Senate. And look what happened that time during that Congress. A pro-abortion bill got passed and signed into law called the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances, making it a federal crime to peacefully blockade an abortion facility or intimidate someone from entering there. That got passed only because the House, the Senate, and the White House were under Democrat control. 95 to 97, it was split again. Republicans took over Congress. It stayed that way through 99 into 2001. And then, of course, with the election of George W. Bush, at the beginning, it was a Democrat Senate. But then look at 2003 to 2005. In that Congress, and this was after the first midterm of George W. Bush being in the White House, Republicans had control, like we do now, of the White House, the Senate, and the House. And what happened then? When they were all red, all across the board, we had some significant national pro-life legislation passed. For the first time since Roe versus Wade, and by the way, take note, 2003, 30 years after Roe v. Wade, the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act was signed into law by President George W. Bush. Now, this had been introduced under the two previous Congresses, except that Bill Clinton, the Congress was Republican, both House and Senate, but Clinton vetoed it twice. So it got through the House, it got through the Senate, it got through reconciliation, it got to the president's desk, he vetoed it. Went through that whole process again, he vetoed it again. But then, 2003 to 2005, Republican president with a Republican Congress, they finally got the bill to his desk, to the desk of a president that was willing to sign it. And for the first time since Roe v. Wade, some babies in the womb ended up getting protection. And Just so happens that that was the first time since Roe v. Wade that the White House, the House of Representatives, and the Senate were all under Republican control, all under the control of the pro-life party. The following year, under that same Congress, another major pro-life bill got passed, the Unborn Victims of Violence Act, passed by the Congress and signed into law by George W. Bush. It includes an unborn child at any stage of development as a separate victim when injured or killed as a consequence of an attack on his or her mother. Then, when we got to after the 2006 election, Congress went back into Democrat control. No pro-life legislation got through. 2009, 2011, 2013, 2015, it was split again. The only other time that all of these three entities came under the control of the pro-life party was now, in this current Congress right now. And brothers and sisters, the final point to add here, and I'm going to explain this in a little bit of detail. Why is it that even if we have a majority, because I'm using the word control, but the word may be too strong for what actually happens, especially in the Senate, because the way that the Constitution works and the way that the rules of the Senate work, there's an awful lot of ability that the minority party has to slow things down or to stop them altogether. And this is why and this is a lesson for this midterm election now. It's not enough to have a majority. You have to have a strong majority. As the president has been saying in some of his speeches, you know, we have a majority, but it's a very slim one. If somebody has a cold, we have to hold off on having a vote, lest that senator or House member doesn't get a chance to vote and the vote goes the wrong way. Now, if you have a party in the minority, when you're going through that process of lawmaking that I reviewed a moment ago, what would the minority party try to do to stop a bill from moving forward that they don't like? Well, it's like with any decision in life that we see coming that we don't like, what do we try to do? We try to delay, delay. And, oh, let's talk about it. Oh, before we do that, let's talk about it a little more. Oh, let's talk about it some more. And you hope sometimes that by talking so much about it, it never gets done. You talk it to death. You debate it forever. So you never come to a decision. Now, in the House of Representatives, you have 435 members. If you've got 435 people debating something, you've got to come to at a certain point and say, okay, everybody, stop talking. And let's vote. Let's decide. Because unless you can have some kind of limit to how much talking they do, they're not going to be legislating. They're just going to be talking. So actually, back all the way back in the 19th century, in the year 1842, a measure was passed to permanently limit the amount of time that the House of Representatives could debate a particular measure. You've got to limit the amount of debate. Otherwise, again, people that don't like it, they'll just keep debating forever. But in the Senate, here's where we run into an issue. In the U.S. Senate, okay, you've got 100 members, right, 100 senators. Any senator can stand up and say about a vote that he doesn't like or bill that he doesn't want to pass, he or she, I want to continue debating this. I have a problem with this, and I'm going to tell you why. And they can just continue stalling the point at which a vote is taken. And that is called a filibuster. You just keep on talking. You keep the debate open. You never get to the point where you close the debate and vote. So, the Senate has measures in place to deal with this. And it is called cloture. Now, cloture comes from a French word. It actually means a fence. What it means is, okay, everybody, we're going to take a vote now to stop all the debating, to stop all the talking, or to limit it. You're going to put a fence around it. In other words, once you invoke cloture, a vote is taken, and then a limited amount of time remains for debate, a defined amount of time. The clock is running, and it's going to run out. And at the end of that time, a vote has to happen. This is what's called a cloture motion. Once cloture, in order for cloture to happen, here's the point. It requires 60 votes. And this is by a rule in the Senate called Rule 22. Originally, it was 2/3 of the senators that were present and voting. That's the way it was constructed in 1917. But then they found that that was too high of a bar to reach, to get 2/3 of the senators present and voting to agree to stop debating and go to a vote. Hardly ever happened successfully. So in 1975, it was changed so that it required 2/3 of all the senators. And that means 60. So that's where we stand now, which means that even if you have, like we have now, a 51 vote majority, well, that's hardly a majority. I mean, it is, but it's not a strong majority. 51 votes is not 60. It's less than 60. Which means for either party, whoever has the majority still doesn't have control in the sense that they can get past whatever they want to get past. Now, if a party has 60 or more votes, then they've got a lot of power, because then they can invoke cloture with anything and get it through the process of passage. But you see that this is the difficulty, because then the question becomes, well, does every decision that the Senate makes require that 60 votes bring it to cloture, that 60 votes are required in order to take a final vote? And the answer to that is not everything. Not everything falls under that rule. There are certain things, in fact, some of the measures that I was just talking to you about fall under this this rule. There's a rule called reconciliation, and these are things that have to do basically with budget. And in those cases, you only need 51 votes. You only need a simple majority to get to pass it. You don't need to have a cloture vote of 60. But with all other kinds of legislation, you still do. Now, there were two changes made recently. In 2013, the Senate voted no more filibuster for judges and executive appointments. In other words, the Senate has to vote to confirm somebody that the president might appoint to a position in the administration. The Senate has to confirm a judge that the president will appoint to the Court of Appeals or to a district court. And the Senate at that time, Democrat-controlled Senate, said, we want to get more of these judges confirmed, because Obama was president. We want to get more of these executive appointments confirmed, and we don't want to have to deal with the Republicans filibustering. So we're going to change the rule so that it only requires a simple majority of 51. And they changed the rule. Right now, that's helping President Trump to get his judges and other appointments confirmed. But this did not affect the Supreme Court. It did not affect the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court could still be filibustered until 2017. Republicans in control of Congress, it was just at the time that Neil Gorsuch was appointed to the court, and they said no filibuster for Supreme Court nominees. And that's why both Neil Gorsuch and just most recently Brett Kavanaugh were able to be confirmed, even though there would not be 60 votes, but a simple majority instead. And that's where we are. But legislation is still subject to the filibuster, which leads us to a bold goal here. The magic number 60. We need 60 pro-life Republican senators. Now, most prognostications are that right now the Senate, Republicans will gain some seats, but not to the point of 60. Well, why don't we make that happen anyway? Why don't we really push? Why don't we really set that as a goal? Why don't we redouble and triple our efforts, brothers and sisters, to get the right kind of senators elected all over this country? And this altogether is the answer to the question as to why it takes so long to get the right kinds of bills passed and signed into law. You can see the obstacles we're dealing with. And this is why it requires patience and perseverance. This is why we've got to keep, this is a long haul. We've got to keep looking forward and keep making progress. We are making progress. We've got to keep on that path. You can't expect that things are going to get done all in one Congress, in one Senate, in one year, in one election. But we keep building. We have to keep building that majority, keep building that progress. Because another thing that happens here, and we didn't look at this, and I won't go into it in detail now because we're going to have a different program coming up where we talk about just the courts. But I showed you what happens when the president, the House, and the Senate are all under dominance of one particular party. But then you have a fourth element here, and that is the courts. And what we saw now with the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh is that the courts, and not only with the Supreme Court, but also this is happening as President Trump gets his nominees confirmed in the courts of appeals, which is right below the Supreme Court, and then in the district courts, which is right below that. The more these judges are Republican appointed, the more they tend to decide in a way favorable to pro-life, to marriage and family and religious freedom, just like we looked at those numbers in the votes that were taken in Congress. So you can look at the way the courts behave and you come to the same conclusion that when a court is under the majority control of Republican appointed judges, again, the tendency, of course there are individual exceptions, of course there are surprises. We're talking about trends here. We're talking about the way things lean. We're talking about probabilities is going to go in the right direction. And so constantly we're building up these victories. The more and more elections we win, the more and more people we put into Congress, the more and more judges we get confirmed on the courts, all of whom who are thinking in that same direction, the more we will get accomplished what we need to accomplish. I hope that is clear. I hope that is something that gives you perspective. I hope that's something that helps you realize, yeah, the party does matter. And I hope it's something that gives you also the zeal to persevere, to stay in this for the long haul, not to become cynical, not to become of the mindset of, oh, this person didn't, this Congress didn't do what it was supposed to do. You saw by those votes, the Republicans that we've elected to Congress did do what they're supposed to do. We just need more of them. And this is where, you know, we're not afraid to push for that because we need to see abortion ended and these babies protected. We need to see all this other progress that's being made with our economy and the military and the protection of our nation's borders and all kinds of other issues, tax reform and down the line it goes to make America great again. Let's persevere. Let's be strong. Let's be active in this election. We're going to take a little break. I want to show you another couple of spots, and then we'll come back with some concluding remarks and an election prayer, and then a little bit more from President Trump's recent rallies. So stay with us.
Many pro-life people worked hard to elect President Donald Trump. That hard work has paid off for the pro-life movement and the unborn. Here are just some of the pro-life accomplishments of the president and his administration. Number 10. President Trump has called on Congress to pass key pro-life legislation to protect babies and defund the abortion industry. Number 9. President Trump has filled his administration with strong pro-life people in key positions. Number 8. President Trump has ended the HHS mandate, forcing employers to cover abortion in health insurance. Number 7. President Trump set up new conscience protections for those who refuse to participate in abortions. Number 6. President Trump ended the secrecy about which health insurance plans cover abortion. Number 5. President Trump stopped funding the abortion industry overseas. Number 4. President Trump protected your tax dollars from funding abortion through Title 10. Number 3. President Trump gave the states the right to stop funding Planned Parenthood and abortion. Number 2. President Trump appointed 2 pro-life Supreme Court justices and dozens of other pro-life federal judges. And the number 1 thing, the first and greatest thing that President Trump did for the pro-life movement was to keep Hillary Clinton out of the White House. To all of you who voted for President Trump in 2016, congratulations. Your vote paid off. But be sure to get out and vote again this 2018 midterm election so that the president has a strong pro-life Congress to enable him to continue winning more victories for the cause of life.
Hello, I'm Evangelist Alveda King with a very important message regarding the midterm elections. These elections are every bit as important as the presidential elections or any other election in this country. On every level, it's very important that our leaders believe that in God we trust and that we are and must remain one nation under God. I'll take it one step further and say that we should be teaching that we're not even separate races. We are one blood according to Acts 17:26. One blood and one human race. Abortion is such a threat to America, to the baby in the womb, to the health of the mother, to the relationship of the father and the mother, to the relationship of the family, and then into all areas of life in our nation. But we each can do something about it. I urge all of our followers and our communities to vote for life. Your vote matters.
Well, friends, I hope you liked that clip, by the way, of President Trump's pro-life accomplishments. You can view that online at prolifepresident.com, prolifepresident.com. Well, as you know, we are, along with educating you on things like we reviewed tonight, we are also urging you to join us in our prayer campaign, and I'd like to have you say the election prayer with me. You'll find it at electionprayer.com, and you can get it in English and in Spanish. You can also order these beautiful election prayer cards that we'll be happy to send you. And bring this to the attention of your pastors, too. No reason why this prayer I'm about to say can't be said in your churches, linked to from your church website, placed in your church bulletin. It's electionprayer.com. Very simple. But here again, let me remind you before we say the prayer. Every night, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, I'm coming to you on this channel, and we're going to continue to study the dynamics of why and how these elections are important, of why and how they lead us to victories to make America great again, victories for pro-life. We've got to understand the process. And I know that many of you are going to share this with other people so that they can understand the process and get the motivation to know what we have to do. So we're going to come. Please come. Stay with me from now till Election Day. Every night at 9 o'clock, and then we're going to do broadcasting in the morning, too. And we're going to have times of prayer. We're going to have times of education, like we did tonight. We're going to have times of prayer, hours of prayer for our nation as we enter into this election. We've got to be praying now because voting is happening right now. Early voting is in play in many states, and again, on our website, or the prolifevote.com, one of those blue buttons that we saw tonight goes to an election calendar that you can see if there's early voting in your state and when it begins. So we're in the midst of it right now. This is election day already. It's election season. So let's be praying very hard. And would you pray with me now as well? In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. O God, we acknowledge you today as Lord, not only of individuals, but of nations and governments. We thank you for the privilege of being able to organize ourselves politically and of knowing that political loyalty does not have to mean disloyalty to you. We thank you for your law, which our founding fathers acknowledged and recognized as higher than any human law. We thank you for the opportunity that this election year puts before us to exercise our solemn duty not only to vote, but to influence countless others to vote and to vote correctly. Lord, we pray that your people may be awakened. Let them realize that while politics is not their salvation, their response to you requires that they be politically active. Awaken your people to know that they are not called to be a sect fleeing the world, but rather a community of faith renewing the world. Awaken them, that the same hands lifted up to you in prayer are the hands that pull the lever in the voting booth, that the same eyes that read your word are the eyes that read the names on the ballot, and that they do not cease to be Christians when they enter the voting booth. Awaken your people to a commitment to justice, to the sanctity of marriage and the family, to the dignity of each individual human life, and to the truth that human rights begin when human lives begin, and not one moment later. Lord, we rejoice today that we are citizens of your kingdom. May that make us all the more committed to being faithful citizens on earth. We ask this through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. Friends, as I mentioned at the beginning, if you have one of these MAGA hats, I would love to get a picture of you wearing it. Send it in to me right here on our Facebook page, and we'll make a collage of all the people around the country that are with us 1,000% and ready to win victories in this election and ready to make America great again. God bless you. See you tomorrow.
Hi, my name is Father Rick Rohr. I'm the pastor of St. Cyril and Methodius Byzantine Catholic Church in Cary, North Carolina. And one of our first visitors when I moved to Carolina from Rome was Father Pavone. And he came down to encourage us, and he was an inspiration, and the work he's been doing and the support that he gives has been constant and has been a great gift to us. And we remember him with affection. We appreciate the work that's always done, and we keep him in our prayers as we continue in the work that he has inspired us to do.
Hi, this is Sean Carney, the campaign director of 40 Days for Life, and I just wanted to express the impact that Priest for Life has had on me as a young person when I was in the 7th or 8th grade, seeing the Priest for Life materials distributed.
We have the best economy in the history of our country. We're taking care of our veterans, protecting our great seniors, and rebuilding America's military might like it hasn't been built before. African-American unemployment has reached its lowest level in recorded history.
The only reason to vote Democrat is if you're tired of winning.
Democrats take control. They will try to plunge our country into gridlock, poverty, and chaos. The Democrats have become the party of crime. They have become the party of crime. Think of it. Republicans are the party of law and order and justice. Today's Democrats have embraced radical socialism and open borders. If you don't have borders, you don't have a country, folks. If you want safety, if you want a border, if you want America to remain a sovereign, great country, then you must organize, mobilize, register, and vote Republican. We need more Republican votes.
Hello, I'm Evangelist Alveda King. I'm blessed to work with Priest for Life, one of the largest and most visible pro-life ministries in the world. Our whole team relies on your financial support to be able to do our work, produce our programs, and travel the world to advocate for the unborn. May I ask you to support us generously? Go today to prolifedonation.org and give as generous a gift as you can. We appreciate it and we'll pray for you each day.